Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. I have a 7 in the affirmative.
Working out.
Motion carries. Now, Board, what further would you like to do?
I'll make a motion to waive the 30-day waiting period between preliminary and final approval.
Thank you, sir. Motion been made to waive the requirement for the preliminary and final approvals to be held at separate meetings. To the motion, do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Sitting
in? Yes.
Motion been made and seconded. Any further discussion? We've picked on the secretary enough. I don't think this is too controversial. All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions. Motion carries. Anything further you'd like to do?
Make a motion to grant final approval for the Giacchino subdivision.
Motion has been made to grant final approval to the subdivision. To the motion, do I have a second?
I'll second.
Eric?
Yep.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, let's go roll with.
Mr. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Bergman?
Yes.
Mr. Bouchard?
Aye.
Mr. Duke?
Yes.
Mr. Siegel?
Yes.
Mr. Shaver?
Yep.
Chairman?
Aye. I have a 7 in the affirmative. Motion carries. Board, is there anything further you'd like to do?
Make a motion for the chairman and one member of the planning board to sign the plan when submitted.
Motion been made for the chairman and one member of the planning board to sign the Mylar has been submitted. To the motion, do I have a second?
Second.
Is that right?
Yep.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion? In the sense of redundancy, reflected on the secretary, no. I don't think this is controversial. All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Abstention? Motion carries. Mr. Rourke, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Have a good night.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Next item I have is Jacoby Farms. We have one more.
Yes, we do. Hold on. Let me get you. Joe, are you there? Joe?
Yes, I'm there. Hello?
Yep, we can hear you fine.
Okay, great. Can you provide me with co-host ability so you can share my screen?
Oh, yeah, sure. Hold on a second. There you go. We can see it.
Okay. Can everybody see that cover slide?
Yes.
Okay. Good evening. Joe Gamble with the Environmental Design Partnership here at the Adams Road Builders. Their application for a 49-lot subdivision known as Jacoby's Farm. We're here tonight to present the preliminary plans for the overall subdivision and request that the board, if it deem appropriate, schedule a public hearing for the May meeting. Brief little history on the project. The project has been front of board several times since December. Has previously been presented as two separate projects on the existing separate tax parcels as Jacoby Farm North and Jacoby Farm South. At the request of the board, after a couple meetings, we have decided to combine both tax parcels into a single project. We're now looking at an quick look at the zoning map. Property is located in R2. Again, the property is located on both the north and south sides of Brent Road, totaling approximately 27 acres of land. Land itself, I think everyone's very familiar. It is relatively flat. There's a couple piles of some compost material that we have looked at and talked about in the past about having the fire department involved in its excavation or removal for safety purposes. What we are looking at here is a 49-lot cluster subdivision in which we have 23 lots on the north side of the road and 26 lots on the south side of the road. Lots themselves, some of the stricter vision, are going to be approximately 65 to 80 feet wide, 25-foot front yard setbacks, 7.5-foot side yard setbacks, 10-foot rear yard setback. Stormwater will be managed on site. We are proposing a single, sorry, it's back here. So we are proposing a single stormwater management area. All the town roads will be collected in a standard basement drain pipe system, ditch parks, stormwater management area. That stormwater management area will be only operated by a future HOA for the project. All of the infrastructure within the roadbeds, pipes, catch basins, and things of that nature will be the responsibility of the Town Monroe Highway Department. Sanitary sewer for the site will be serviced by individual septic systems on each individual lot. Water, there will be a water main extended along Lennox Boulevard and up in through all proposed roads A through F that will provide service to the individual homes. The applicant is starting the process of being set up to be an outside district user with the water department. Something we've had several conversations with the town about, and that is how we move forward there. A couple of amenities I wanted to point out within the subdivision. We are proposing about 2.3 acres of dedicated HOA open space. That land will be located here, which will be utilized for small stormwater features, green features, and separate between lots on Road B and C. Then the largest area of HOA land will be located in the front yards of all lots spacing are located on Road D. We had some specific design ideas that we wanted to implement in this project, contrary to a lot of conservation subdivisions or cluster subdivisions where the open space is tied up in rear yards. We wanted all our open space for this community to be in front yards where everybody can see it and have these vibrant play areas. We believe that having these areas out front will add to the aesthetics of the Monroe Brick Road, the entrance to the Harry B. Carr Park. Again, we think this is an important design element to help enhance this area of the town. We're going to provide a 5-foot wide asphalt trail from Road D all the way into the entrance of the park. We are providing street trees and street lights along the entire length of the road. We are dedicating two areas at the entrance to the park for a sign. So there will be park entrance signs erected and landscaped within those areas. We're also proposing a future connection to the lands to the south. If ever those lands were to be developed, they have a second means of egress to the site. With that, again, we're here tonight for any comments the board may have, and we're looking to schedule a public hearing for May. Thank you.
Board, questions, comments?
This is Ann. I have a question regarding the areas that are going to be HAO owned and maintained. I guess there's just one of those. They're a big rectangular on the south side?
Yes, that is going to be HOA owned and maintained. The other green areas within the cul-de-sacs and the loop roads will be owned by the town. We're trying to negotiate with the highway department. We have some more conversations with the town attorney about how we can work within those areas and maintain those areas as green space.
And in terms of the kind of green space you're talking about, I imagine that there's some competition with stormwater management or drainage in these areas. Is that true?
That was a previous plan. Our newer, the current stormwater plans, we went to the overall stormwater system with a large pond here. They're no longer being utilized for stormwater management areas in the centers of those loops. The green space we're looking at is essentially mowed lawn, maybe some trees, nothing, no permanent structures currently within the town right away. We may be looking at some features that the HOA deems appropriate within the loop in front of Road D.
The other thing they did to improve the stormwater plan here, and it's one that I think is just that, an improvement, is they took the small depressions that were shown in each lot as a stormwater management device, so to speak. Those have been eliminated now, and the stormwater is being handled much more conventionally to the retention pots. What about that?
Yeah. You say that, but on my plan, page 2 of 11, all of those little bits are still shown in the plan.
Yeah, he said to revise that.
Yeah, I don't see them on the plan in front of me on the screen, but on the paper plan that was sent out of the package, it's there.
Joe, is that not a revision, Joe?
No, that is a revision. Jim and I had talked about this the middle of last week. The plan that was submitted showing had some discrepancies that in those areas were shown. We subsequently reviewed that and took a hard look at them, and they are not needed, and they're no longer part of the plan.
Okay.
And then the other area that I wanted to clarify is that little strip of, or not so little, that strip of land between one of the eyebrows of the cul-de-sac, right there, yeah. That's HOA owned as well, correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I thought that was to be Cameron.
No, that land will be conveyed to the HOA similar to what was done in Arrowhead. And the thought being that if the HOAs got together and were able to decide that it was appropriate to put a trail in, that would be the location for it.
I think that is a huge
benefit. Jim, you sent out an email last week or whatever. I'm looking at an updated plan that you sent out.
Correct.
And in that, it shows only that large rectangle being HOA owned, right? All the other green spaces down here become town-owned land.
I think in my understanding is there's two HOA-owned properties, actually three. The rectangular area and the largest rectangular area, that loop road. The strip of land that goes from Arrowhead down to Lenox Boulevard.
Yes.
And then the land for the storm ponds will be HOA-owned, or is that town-owned and HOA-maintained?
I think maybe the part of the problem is we got a whole bunch of different versions of the plan out here. I'm looking at Community Master Plan, Sheet 2 of 11, revision. I got to zoom in on the kind of thing, but it got sent an email the other day, and that shows it was revision on April 5th of 21. And that shows that strip of land coming out of Arrowhead being HOA to maintain town-owned open space. And then it indicates that all of the green space, except for the stormwater management and the large rectangle, is town-owned. So is that not correct?
other than it's being utilized for stormwater management.
Okay. I see that note's changed up where you're pointing right now, that arrow, where your pointer is, that used to point at that green space too. Okay.
Yeah, I think that might have been an error meter that we noticed when we were preparing the renders for this, okay, this presentation.
So just to refresh me, because I don't recall this, and maybe it's a conversation I missed, what's the purpose of the town owning the loop at Road A, B, and E?
So those are all going to be town-owned and dedicated roadways.
So then the median area gets transferred to the town as well?
Yeah, within the standards of the town to have a 60-foot right-of-way, by the time that road is described, it leaves a tiny sliver of grass in the middle of that right-of-way that's maybe only 10 feet wide.
Okay. Thank you.
Jim, they said there's going to be lighting there. Do we have to create a lighting district, or is that how does that work?
I think a lighting district would have to be created, because certainly at this size it would be warranted. Carla, that's done at the time after the final, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, so yes, the lighting district would be.
Okay, created. All right, thank you. Wasn't sure how that worked.
And they will own and maintain and pay for the power.
Thank you.
I have a question. This is John Arnold. We have a few lots in this subdivision, quite a few of them, that are exceptionally small. At least a few of them, if I'm measuring correctly, have side lots under 8 feet between the home, proposed home, and the edge of the side lot. I mean, is that accurate?
The proposed side yard setbacks are 7.5 feet.
Zoning weighed in on that?
This is like clustered subdivision, so that is possible.
Alright, so the dotted lines that we have on the paper plan that I have here at home, because I'm on a very small tablet, trying to see anything on the map here other than an overview is difficult. Are those dotted lines our 7.5 foot setbacks?
Yes.
Alright, so then if I once again ask the question, are these houses within 8 feet of their boundary lines? How many of these houses are within 8 feet of both side lot boundary lines?
As proposed, again, you're showing, you know, rectangular boxes or potential house layouts.
Yes.
I don't believe at construction any of that will be within 7.5 feet of both side yard lot lines. They may be within 7.5 feet of a property line on one side of the house and 10 or 15 on the other side.
Okay.
What we are proposing is the minimum side yard setback is 7.5 feet.
Okay. Because the reason I'm asking is if you end up with it to the 7.5 foot mark on both sides, then I don't see how you get anything in the backyard bigger than a lawnmower. So if somebody were to want to do something in their backyard, they technically could not get there with that small a setback. So I was going to propose to you that if the houses were going to be able to, if you could at least make sure that one of the side setbacks leaves at least 10 feet for access.
Yeah, because if you make it 7.5 feet, even if at construction they don't put it there, someone could add on later. And
true.
You're going to leave it. It's going to get to be a pinch point.
I mean, I've done many communities within the county with 7.5 foot side yards and construction of those units and maintenance of the rear yards. Never come back as a concern or an issue during construction. But it's a point taken. Certainly we can look at it, see if we can
such a circumstance. Just to let you know, in Winterberry, that was a cluster subdivision, and that was approved at 10 feet.
Yeah.
I'm personally a lot more comfortable with 10 feet than 7.5.
Well, I'd say I'm at least, I'd be more comfortable with 10 feet on at least one side. Just for access purposes.
Yeah, I think we can make the ten feet on one side work.
Now this access way you have that you've shown, that's an access to Arrowhead's development. Where does that line up with the access way in Arrowhead's between houses to gain access to it?
I don't know exactly where it lines up between houses, but it does connect to the open space, HOA open space lands.
Okay, because it looks like it might be running across from their stormwater management.
Yes, it does kind of line up with their stormwater management, and it's certainly being provided that if there's any excessive storm event or overflow during a 100-year storm that comes out of that basin, that it can be appropriately conveyed through this site as the low spot from Arrowhead comes through the Jacoby Farms. This would protect all the houses within the community as well as provide access points.
So I'm the pain in the neck that's been bugging you about the access and reform. I haven't heard an answer back from the town as to whether they would even want to have an access point in the corner there to the park. Okay. So I appreciate what you've done here bringing over. I can say I'm a little concerned because it comes in and meets up with the park road opposite the bicycle path on your plan. If I'm not incorrect, there's still the plan along the one side to have a walkway or bicycle path along the end of the road.
Yes, through the bicycle paths on the south side of the road.
So I commend you. I mean, this is certainly better than Route 32. And I guess I can say that it meets what I was hoping for, to at least allow options to navigate directly to the park without having to go on a major highway. So I thank you for that.
I agree. I was one of my comments that I think we should be looking at that and at least at a minimum putting in a crosswalk with some of those like pedestrian lights, the crosswalk lights the kids could get, that kind of thing. I don't know if a stop sign makes sense in there, but there's probably some safety things we could recommend.
I don't know if a stop sign makes sense, but I do see what you're saying. And I would think even just a crosshatch or a crosswalk, letting people know that somebody might be crossing there. Maybe the developer or the town could put in some signs that say bicycle path or crosswalk or whatever, just to warn people so that they think about it.
I found the question. The signs that say, state law, pedestrian is the right way, those things are pretty effective.
Right. The other comment I had is, I'm a little concerned, and I think this may be the reason that the superintendent of schools is coming with her transportation person to talk to the town. It may not have been the previous development, it may be this one. This road is actually, when the park isn't open, this road is a dead end. So I'm not really sure whether the bus, I'm supposing that the bus could go up and turn around into your cul-de-sac. But they may be concerned about the hammerhead at the end of the other side. So that may be what they're coming to talk about. It's just transportation and how the buses would handle that. Mike may be able to speak to that even.
Yeah, I don't know about what she's going to speak about it with transportation right now.
Yeah, I certainly know the cul-de-sac accommodates that's designed after the Town Borough standard cul-de-sac, which can certainly accommodate any of those improvements. The hammerhead, that is designed to accommodate emergency vehicle turnarounds as well as plow truck turnarounds. The purpose of Road F is to ultimately connect with maybe through street down through the adjacent lands to the south. again, that is something we can consider, but it is a temporary, I guess I would put it as a temporary condition on the end of Road F.
Okay.
I'm sure they'll have questions about a dead end road. That's about all that I know right now, Janet. You know? Actually, don't know anything about it.
Board, any further questions? If not, do you feel that you have enough adequate information to go forward?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I'm comfortable.
Just one quick question. You're putting in a new sign for the park entrance, is that correct?
So we are providing the land for the town sign entrance. We're currently negotiating with the town for potential other improvements, working with them to do some improvements to Rec Road, as well as some water line moving. That's all kind of getting packaged and bundled together to determine what the appropriate donations for this project improvements will be.
Okay, thank you.
I just got some comments from the water superintendent as he did his review on this. They're as follows. One, each hydrant needs an in-line valve. There should be a hydrant at the end of the line, at the end of Lenox Boulevard. Water connection needed for a reconnection to the existing Jacoby house that remains. I understand it's got a 2-inch service to it. So that's going to need to be removed and reconnected. And then the hydrants at the end of the cul-de-sac should be positioned, at the end of the cul-de-sac for row E and F. And those were his four comments.
I have another question. The HOA property inside of Loop V, you kind of mentioned something about, infrastructure being added depending on what the HOA, the size or whatever. Are we thinking like a play field or a playground or something in that area? Is that the idea?
So the idea, this is kind of an older community design, is that having this open field area, active recreation area, in the front of the homes, there's many eyes from the community all looking and paying attention to the children. It seems like a safer environment for them.
Okay, so then that does lead to what my comment was going to be, and that is it might be a good idea to have some type of a barrier between that open space and Lenox Boulevard. And what I mean by barrier, I mean like a hedge or a low-level fence or something that, so if kids are out playing ball out there and the ball runs over into the road, it hits the fence instead of running out onto the road.
Okay. Now, that's something I will talk about with the owners and see how we want to address that. Certainly, we want to leave it open and inviting, but certainly do not want to create any safety hazards.
Well, and I would think that they wouldn't want it either. It would be probably their kids playing it. So, I mean, it's just something I thought I'd mention.
Yep.
Board, any further? If not, what do you want to do? But no, we can't go home.
We've got a public hearing for SRHDJM.
No, we don't.
You don't.
We have no public hearing scheduled for May.
No. No, we went ahead with SRH. We didn't hold a public hearing order.
All right. Well, he got his preliminary approval. He's coming back next month.
Yeah, he's coming back for finals, but
yep.
Hearing was closed.
Yeah, all right. I'll make a motion to schedule a public hearing for Jacoby Acres. Jacoby Farms for 7:01 p.m. on May 16th, is it?
I think it's 17th.
Third Monday.
On the calendar here, sorry.
Yeah, May
17th. Yeah, 7:01 p.m. on May 17th, 2021.
Motion has been made. Hold a public hearing for the Jacoby Farm subdivision. May 17th, 7:01. The motion, do I have a second?
Second. You have a second? Eric?
Yeah, I said that. I'll second.
Motion has been made. A second. Further discussion? I do have a question for you. You want to schedule a public hearing on a project that the applicant is going to turn around and make changes to the drawings that have already been submitted. Is that wise? You're going to be changing setbacks and other interesting little bits and bits throughout this whole project. So are we going to schedule a public hearing or something that we don't really know for sure what's going on?
Wait, well, hey.
Mr. Chairman, if I might have.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
So the modification that we are making is related to the removal of the storm ponds in the rear yards. That's something that we have made the changes to the plans. We've identified it to the board that those are coming out, and staff has already reviewed or at least identified that that revision has been, is being made. Nothing is being changed substantively to the overall project, the layout of the roads, the open space, the streets all remains the same as you see it here presented on this map.
Gordon, it's your call. Well, what do you want to do?
You know, if those are the changes, I'm okay keeping the public hearing. You know, if we're not comfortable with it, we can always, you know, table the public hearing.
But we can vote down the motion.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have to approve it.
Right.
Anything else? Okay. To the motion. To declare a public hearing for Jacoby Farms for May 17th. Would you call the roll?
Mr. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Bergman?
Yes.
Bouchard?
Yes.
Ms. Perdue?
Yes.
Mr. Siebel?
Yes.
Mr. Shaver?
Yes.
Chairman?
No. I have a 61, motion carries.
It also need lead agent status.
Mm-hmm. Hey, this is Anne. I'd ask that the applicant for that public hearing when he updates this plan, that he showed the accommodation of the 10-foot on at least one side set up for the setback, and that you call out the acreage in the open space, in each open space,
Now, as we have been correctly advised, do you folks want to assume the role of the lead agency in the environmental assessment review for Jacoby Farms subdivision? That requires a yes, no, or something.
Yes.
There was one yes.
There was one yes.
Yes.
Of course.
I think we're going to get out of hand here. To the motion, the planning board being lead agency for the environmental assessment review for Jacoby Farms, we have a second.
Second. That's Jen.
Yeah.
Jen, okay. Motion's been made and seconded for the planning board down the road assume the role of lead agency for the environmental assessment review for Jacoby Farms. That one, I don't think, is too controversial.
Well, I want to clarify a couple things. First of all, it is an unlisted. The type is unlisted. Is that the consensus?
Yes.
And the agencies to be contacted include DEC, DOH, DOT, the Attorney General, because we have HOA again, County DPW, no. We have the state DOT on this one.
Yeah.
State DOT and the school.
And you have Central County in there?
Yeah, well, they're going to know anything about that.
And
they get the referral.
DEC, DECDOT, and Dolan Serra?
Pardon?
DECDOT, and Dolan Serra. DEC.
DEC, DOH, DOT, New York State AG, and the school.
And school, we got school.
Yep. So it's unlisted, and that's the contact list that I will send out the notices.
Okay, to the motion. All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Turn about, sir, please. Do you have any questions of us?
No, I believe I'm all set. I look forward to coming back at night.
Where did I leave off? I believe the next one is Baker Falls Solar. Do we have one of those?
Yes, we do.
This is Travis. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you, Travis. Do you need to have the screen again?
Yeah, if I could, if you would, please. And also, Michael Cucciara and Lila Schreck on the line from Metamp, if you can unmute them.
Okay, you have the screen still from the first time.
All right.
And what was the second name? I got Michael Cucciara and who else?
Yep, and Lila Schreck.
Okay. You should be all set.
All right. You got that screen?
Yes, I do see it, yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Good evening, Travis Mitchell with the Barrel Design Partnership. Here tonight on behalf of Metamp to review the Baker's Falls Solar Project. As I mentioned, I also have Michael and Liza on the Zoom meeting with us. And I think Michael would like to start off just with a few slides, just a little background on Metamp and the solar project in general, not in the details of this particular project. Mike, are you? Yeah, go ahead.
Yep, you can hear me. Great. Well, thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for having us. I thought it'd be helpful to give a quick overview of who Metamp is and what we do in the solar world. So, we were founded back in 2007, so we're 14 years of work in the solar industry. We were based in Boston and grew from a northeast solar developer to a nationwide installer. About 6 years ago, we got very active in New York State and remain so. We've developed over 115 megawatts of projects that are operating at this point across the state. Another 22 projects, over 107 megawatts in construction currently, set to go online within the coming year. In addition, you know, NextAmp is not a developer that just sells projects at the end. We are long-term owners of these projects and asset managers, providing operations and maintenance, 24-hour, 24/7 monitoring, etc. So we really, our business model is to have these projects long-term, and that includes also being the community solar provider. We are, you know, have over 10,000 residential subscribers. This project would be positioned as a community solar project. However, depending on where the incentives end up at the end of this process, the other potential path we might have is a remote crediting project, which would act the same way as community solar, but would serve primarily municipalities, hospitals, and larger local companies. But our preference would be to bring it forward as a community solar project that would do both local residents would benefit through a 10% discount on utility bills, and then these larger off-takers would also be able to participate. Most notably in the area, we've actually created agreements with both Albany Medical Center as well as Saratoga Hospital, saving them, you know, over $4.7 million in savings over the next 20 years from other projects that we've developed across the state. So we believe in solar as a renewable energy, clean energy source that's locally created and supporting the local community. So that's basically, you know, who NextAmp is. I'll let Travis kind of get into this project on the Moreau Industrial Park. It's a 2.5 megawatt solar project. And Travis, I'll let you go ahead and jump in as needed.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. So, yeah, as Mike mentioned, this is a 2.5 megawatt solar project. This is going to be a single-axis tracker system, which an example of that is shown in the picture to the right. And so, unlike many of the solar panels that you may have seen, which are orientated east-west and generally slope-facing to the south, these rows of panels are aligned to north-south, and the panel itself rotates during the day to track the sun. The maximum height of these is just under 18 feet. This particular project, we're not proposing battery storage. You'll see in a moment an outline of the project. It's about 13 acres of fenced area. And the location of this is fortunate that there's good natural screening and then through existing vegetation and topography. To really screen it very well from surrounding receptor points. So the project, as you know, I take a look at our application, is located within the Moreau Industrial Park. I've outlined in red the general perimeter of the industrial park. We're in the far western boundary of the site. The site itself, at the yellow, there's about 32 acres within the industrial park. The town zoning map for reference, again, the site there at the tip of the red arrow, it's within the N1 zone, and permitted in that zone as an electric power plant use. It requires site plan review by the planning board. A close-up of the site, again, would be Moreau Industrial Park, the general perimeter outlined in red, and this site on the western side, generally the boundary outlined in green. The access point out here, so we have, this is the road that comes into the industrial park, the existing cul-de-sac here, and so there'll be an access road you'll see on the slide momentarily that comes in across the power lines into the site here and providing access within the site, and also the electricity will go out to the voltage cables out to the existing grid here we export out. The site plan that you've got, orientation is located here, but north is to the right now. I find it a little easier to view these overlaid in Google Earth, which is what we've got on this screen. Again, just some of the high points connecting to the grid here at the site entrance on Farnham Road. It starts off as a 20-foot wide road initially. That's what National Grid requires to the connection point, and then proposing a 15-foot wide access road into the site, and it actually next bounds to 12 feet wide as we get further into the site. It's all set up for tractor trailer movements and movements for the initial portion of construction, which also serves for the ability to move emergency vehicles through the site later on. So it's, again, about 13 acres of fenced area. So the fenced area is shown in this yellow line here, 7-foot high perimeter fence that surrounds the site. We have a single equipment pad here, centrally located inverter and transformer that connect all the low voltage lines running between the panels at this point here, and then again, medium voltage line that goes out to the existing grid. So I'm going to back up one slide quickly, actually back up a couple of slides. So one of the common discussion points on solar projects is visibility. And as I mentioned earlier, we're fortunate here where it's really well screened. You can see in my overall, there's a few properties on System Road that do back up to our site or nearby, and they are the closest potential receptor points. I did run, in anticipation of this discussion, I did run a couple of simple profiles from these points, so from two locations. There's a residential home here, you can just see it outlined. And so what I'm showing is looking from this home across and into the proposed solar farm, what that elevation profile looks like. So this is the starting point of the home, and you can see the rear yard of the home here, and then there's quite a rise in this general vicinity here before it drops back down into the site. So across that profile, this represents the 18-foot high solar panel, which is in this portion of the profile. And you can see that the view is blocked by the hill between the proposed solar farm and the home. For the location, the other closest residential location here, just south, we've got a little bit, again, receptor point at 20 feet high, that's representing a second-story bedroom. I don't even know if it is a two-story house, but it's kind of worst case condition. Looking to the east, across to the solar farm, you can see we just clipped the top of the hill here. It may be able to, in a moonscape with all the vegetation cleared, catch the top edge of some of these nearby, the closest panels. But there is some amount of vegetation between the two, so I would expect that in the wintertime you may catch a little visibility on the top of the panel. It's a really well-screened site in general. So the approval process, again, an M1 zone, so we're required to go through site plan review with the planning board. Of course, this is our first visit in front of you. A public hearing is at the option of the board for site plan review. Of course, you need to go through the secret process, and then eventually a decision on the site plan review. The steps for the board, if you're willing and agree, we'd like you to consider declaring yourself lead agency and initiating coordinated review. I'm not sure if this requires a county referral or not. I suspect maybe it doesn't, so I'll have to talk to Jim about that. And then again, if and when the board is ready and feels that a public hearing is necessary, to schedule a public hearing. That's all I have. Any questions?
Board questions? Oh, come on.
Sarah, so far is that away from the sewer pump station down there? Is that closer?
Let's see. Let me get to this one. I took the sewer pump station in here. Do I have that right, Mike?
I don't know.
from here to the site going to be roughly 750 to 1,000 feet.
Okay. All right, good. Thank you.
Yep.
Travis, how close is this to the river?
Close to the river. Let me go back a couple slides. So it's on the, you see the river here, and yes. The industrial park perimeter is outlined in red, so we're on the opposite side of the power lines. Here's that power line run from the river.
So you're within 500 feet of the river?
No, we're not within 500 feet of the river.
This
distance. I measured this distance, John, from the edge of our property to Farnham Road is just a little over 800 feet, so just to give you some perspective on scale. Yeah.
Okay. A couple other quick questions. Do you have a right-of-way in hand for the National Grid Transit for crossing there?
Good question. Good question. I was going to speak to that. Mike, are you still?
Sure. Yep. No, we do need to go through a separate permitting application with National Grid. I think we were intending to launch that, and our parents launched that once, you know, we came before the board tonight to make sure that, you know, the current access point, there were no concerns about that. I would also note, in addition to that National Grid proposal, we will need to secure an easement to get across those lands to Farnham Road as well, and that will be something we will need to work on.
Okay, number two, since I have the solar experts on hand there on the call, these are tractor panels?
Correct.
Do you have other tractor panels in the Northeast?
Yes, we do. Part of the products that I mentioned, we have them in many locations. I'm trying to think. One that comes to mind most recently that just went live is in the town of Johnstown on Hells Mills Road. It's got a tractor system. We have them out in Syracuse and then, frankly, throughout the state.
So these are single-axis tractors?
Correct.
They're not adjusting to the angle of the sun, just the location of the sun. I'm just wondering, because I've had comments from a couple of people that I know from NYSERDA that have said that these can be a bit of a challenge in the Northeast. I wondered what your experience is with that.
Sure, and they certainly were several years ago, but I think they've made quite good advancements and also had a long time or longer time now. We can look at existing projects. It's certainly something you're going to see more and more. I'd say 60-70% of the projects we do are tractor systems when the topography allows, because we get that added production, which is key to making the projects viable, and that our operations and maintenance team is fairly comfortable with them at this point and believe they'll work in the Northeast and do work.
Thank you.
No problem.
This is
Anna.
I have a couple of questions. It appears like there's a waterway to the west of the field itself? What's the nature of that?
Yeah, good question, Ann. So you're looking at this corridor through here?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, so it's an intermittent stream. We've had wetlands delineated on the site, and that corridor delineated, that's quite frankly why the shape of this is the way it is. There is a finger of wetland in this area here, you can see by that shading. And so we do have some wetland disturbance associated with some clearing in that wetland. It's about two-tenths of an acre of disturbance. And just in general, Army Corps of Engineers does not consider the installation of solar panels in no wetland as disturbance, whereas the DEC wetlands that do consider it disturbance. So this is Army Corps wetland, and the disturbance that we have here is associated with the need for some clearing, not necessarily the panel. So it's something that we will be permitting.
Okay, we will be maintaining the vegetation and the landscape, I guess, outside of the perimeter of the fence.
Yeah, so there'll be some clearing outside the perimeter of the fence. It's included in the submittal that have for shading. We need to clear a certain distance outside the perimeter of the fence for shading, and that will certainly be maintained. If he makes.
Okay, and would you be submitting an operation and maintenance plan as well as a decommissioning plan?
Yes, yep.
Let's see, Baker LLC. I presume that's owned by NextCam?
Yes, yeah, correct. That is correct.
It's sold as maybe a sole purpose corporation. It just and it runs this operation here. It'll be the owner.
Correct. Exactly. It'll be a wholly owned of NextCam Inc., which is the parent company.
Okay, and so in order to ensure things like the proper operation, maintenance, and decommissioning of this, are you going to be posting security?
We are prepared to post a bond, which we typically do, to secure to the benefit of the town.
Has that been discussed with the town chair?
It has not.
Do you have an amount in mind?
Typically with these projects, following administrative guidelines, like $30,000 per megawatt. This project at the 2.5 megawatt AC size, you're looking at $70,000 to $80,000 or so. With math on that there. Awesome.
Board, anything further?
This is Mike. Do you have a lot of problem with vandalism and your other sites?
No, we have not experienced that. The project is surrounded by a security fence, or I should say a 7-foot-high fence, or wire or anything like that. It can set security fence, but per electric code, we have not experienced that.
Okay.
There would be entrance once we, in this particular case, once we get across the transmission line corridor, there would be a fence there. We can provide, knox boxes for local fire departments, but, it would be locked, and we have not experienced that where it's been an issue.
Okay, so you do provide the knox boxes then?
Yes, sir.
Okay, all right. Yeah, we need to make a note of that, Jim, for the fire department. We set up for that, for the knox boxes. So you haven't had any problems with vandalism? Because this is kind of like in an area where there's a lot of four-wheelers and that kind of stuff down through there. So I just want to make you aware.
Yep. So
make you aware of that, that's all.
The only bit of security equipment that sometimes we do install, and actually more for operation and maintenance concerns, sometimes there is a camera right that's sort of pointed at the inverter and electric pad. And that's really more for safety concerns like that, but we're not as concerned with the remaining area.
So do you plan on putting cameras there then?
If at all included, it would just be on basically trained on that equipment pad for kind of remote analysis if we need it.
Yeah, I just think it would be beneficial to you guys, only because of what goes on down there some of the times. So, just a suggestion.
Thank you. We're familiar in a lot of areas. We're kind of coexisting with snowmobile paths or ATV, things like that. So we are having that an issue.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I have a couple of questions I need to direct towards council. And that is, when the park was created, the stated purpose was to bring jobs in. Now, when this is light, this is not, I don't believe, going to generate them. Is that still in effect, or is that enforceable?
Well, at this point, you're just looking at the zoning allows this site plan. The whole idea of the park, there's nothing in writing that I'm aware of that says the park requires you to have jobs. That was intent, but, and Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if you're aware of any, there's no legal documents that say you have to demonstrate that you're going to create jobs in the park. I've never seen one. I have heard that before, Mr. Chairman. I have yet to see a document that says that.
I actually, believe it or not, read through the draft environmental impact statement on the original park creation because in a prior life, I represented a client for a chip fabrication plant here. Before Mr. Jensen, I remember standing in front of him at the old town hall, and they were going to buy several lots here, and that was in the late summer, early fall of 2009, just before the financial crisis. The project got approved and never built because of said financial crisis. They were a European company and they got especially hard hit. But no, to answer the question, as I recall, there is no job creation component per se. The thing I would say as a staff comment is that of all the lots in the industrial park, this is the least attractive by virtue of its location and its accessibility. So, in my opinion, you know, it lends itself to this is a good use of that site because I don't think you're going to see active use of this property in association with another, you know, industrial type building. Not ever, but I wouldn't say ever, but it's going to be difficult to extend a active industrial use or manufacturing use down in this particular area of the park.
I might add to that, Jim, that I'm going to say I kind of like this use in its particular location because
exactly.
the closeness or proximity to residences. So we're putting in a semi-industrial use that makes almost no impact. It certainly makes no sound impact on the surrounding residences. So as much as they are right next to an industrial park, if we can have an industrial use that doesn't have negative impacts to the residences next door, that seems to be a plus to me.
It's almost like a buffer, you know, a buffer of sorts.
Right.
The second question I have for council, if memory serves me correct, and I may be wrong, that any portion of the documentation for the park, the industrial park, was that any user of any lot was charged a fee which was going to be used for transportation improvements. They were particularly looking at coming up from 197. Was the one that they were security for, but it was general for transportation improvements. Is that still in effect, and are we going to blindside this company?
You're asking me the whole question today, Mr. Chairman. I have not can't speak to that. I was not around when the industrial park was created, but I can absolutely look into it and let everyone know.
I just want to bring it up so we don't surprise these folks at the end, and it's still in effect.
Those documents are, to shorten your search, Carla, those documents are still on file with Saratoga Economic Development Corporation.
Yeah. Right. Yes, they should be.
They're the ones who represented the park through its permitting and subdivision.
Okay, thank you.
That is a sewer district, Carla. I do know that.
Oh, no, I'm aware of that.
What's that?
I have another question. And this is, I guess, for Travis. I don't see any accommodation for stormwater management. All right, and walk me through this.
Yeah, great question, John. So there is actually some accommodation for stormwater. It's here, here, and here. But in general, with these solar projects, DEC has taken a very lenient look at them, or I don't know if that's not the right word, but they 2018, they came out with guidance on how to apply their stormwater guidance to solar farms. And effectively, what that says is that you treat the impervious areas of the roadways and the transformer pads only. And if you meet certain criteria, you don't consider the panels themselves as impervious. And the criteria that they want you to meet is certain green space between the panels. So, that's what on all of these solar projects that we're working on, that's the criteria, the threshold that we need to make sure that we're only needing to treat the roadways and the equipment pads. So effectively, the stormwater becomes really minor on them.
So what DEC determined was that the impervious nature of the green space around it acts as the stormwater for the non-impervious.
That's right.
Solar
panels. Yeah, they call it disconnected runoff. So they want the panel to the rainwater to fall off the panel or across the green space, before it runs off the slope. So as long as you've got a certain amount of green space between those panels, they consider it disconnected enough that you're going to have infiltration as it would naturally occur and spaced out throughout the site, so it doesn't concentrate, basically.
So in general, it's a greenscape type of dealing with soil.
That's how they view it, yes.
This will be funded to a
story. Oh yeah. So we'll have Jim said it would be subject to a SWIP. So we'll have over an acre of disturbance. That's the threshold, and we'll comply with the SWIP, and there'll be erosion and sediment control measures that are shown in the drawings that you have that are put in place during construction, and you'll have the weekly inspections that you have on SWIP related projects. But the actual long term. Permanent stormwater features are really pretty minimal.
Okay. So I assume that erosion control stuff is the sediment traps that are shown on the design?
Yep. Okay. Yep. Okay. Sediment traps, silt pen, those type of things, the temporary measures.
Okay. Jim, does the town have access to experts who could review things like a decommissioning plan?
We can get access to that, and I would recommend that to confirm the amount proposed. And I would also have Carla review the proposed agreement for the exercise of that option if ever needed.
These decommissioning plans, I mean, is that an escrow account that money just sits in?
As with anything like this, for full security into the future, there's various forms that you could look at. Usually it's a bond, as the applicant indicated. But it can be a letter of credit. Bonds are very common for things like this, as I understand it. But we should have, I think the idea of expert review is a good one.
I think we typically would, again, this is all new to us, but I think typically there'd be an operation and maintenance plan as well to be reviewed.
Correct.
We can provide both operations and maintenance plan as well as, along with the decommissioning plan, submit sort of our typical bond language and a letter just describing sort of our bond levels that we maintain with our company, and you can definitely do a legal review on that form as well.
That would be great.
I was going to say, as Mike mentioned earlier, NYSERDA put out some good guidance for the towns that they're considering these projects to review relative to decommissioning plans and those type of things. So if you don't have that, we can certainly send that over to you as well.
Yeah, send that over, Travis, because I was going to suggest that's a good place for us to start is moving nice sort of.
Yeah.
I would appreciate it. I was just trying to figure out what happens if this particular installation is sold to recurring two or three different owners, and then eventually one of them goes bankrupt or whatever. Oh, I wondered how that worked. Is there some kind of a pot of money that has to go with this site, it's going to be there in 25 or 30 years, so that has to be decommission?
Well, I think one of the things that would be required, John, is those, the operation and maintenance plan, decommissioning plan, would have to be transferable.
Right, right. Okay. Just for information, I was just curious.
Yep.
That makes sense. If I could just add as well, this is also a second layer of protection for the town. In our typical leases, which was used in this case, we also, the owner of this project, whether it's NextAmp or someone else down the line, although we intend it to be NextAmp long term, would have obligations to decommission for the owner as well. So this would be sort of an added layer. But I agree with your points as well. So thank you.
Okay, board. Chairman, Mr. Martin, we need a formal resolution to send this to consultants.
I think we need, as you do an escrow account, you know, agreement from the applicant to establish one. I've already written to Travis about the need for the SWIP, which is typical, but this third-party review of a decommissioning and operation and maintenance plan would be another added cost to that account. So I would suggest we get that concurrence of the applicant to do that, and then go forward from there.
Okay.
And yeah.
Then I guess the next question is, board, what would you like to do?
I'm going to say I think we have a complete plan in front of us.
Yeah.
So I would be comfortable with moving ahead with a public hearing next month.
Do you want to move for a public hearing prior to having a response from the consultants?
Can I? I'd like to pop in here. This is Carla.
No.
I would really think that you should not have a public hearing if you do hear back from the consultants, but more importantly, the speaker. This is a type one, so you're going to have to do your 30 days to get the information back. So you can have your public hearing, but you can't do anything.
Right, you're right. I forgot about that.
So I really want to claim you need to start from that process.
We want to go through the one and designation and then do a coordinated review. And I looked at GML 239, the benefits of having in my office right now. And I don't see why because it does not fall into any requirements.
Okay, that was my thought also, Carol.
Yeah, I couldn't think of any reason why I would need referral.
Travis, we're on the same page a lot.
Okay, Mark. Do you desire to declare yourself a lead agency for the environmental assessment review for Baker Falls Solar?
Yes.
Who did?
Jerry.
Jerry, okay. Motion has been made for the Planning Board of Town Hall to assume the role of lead agency for environmental assessment review for Baker Falls LLC site plan. So the motion, do I have a second?
I'll second it.
That Ann?
That was Ann.
Yeah.
Okay. Motion has been made, second.
Alright, so for contacted agencies, we would have DEC, obviously.
DEC.
Is NYSERDA agency withstanding? Carla, do they have any permitting
in
this? No.
They don't have to approve it.
Okay. Yeah, DEC.
DOT's not involved.
No DOH.
Just fight for comment.
It's for coordinated review, so they'd be, you know, consenting to your lead agent status.
Okay.
It's usually an agency that has permitting authority. No.
Travis, did you say you were Army Corps of Wetlands?
Yes, Army Corps would be it.
So we have Army Corps and DEC.
We're not dealing with anybody in the utilities.
Sir, I was going to ask, do we need to contact Niagara Mohawk or National Grid?
No, it would be the Public Service Commission.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll send them one. Can't hurt.
Yeah.
All right, so I have three. I have DEC, Army Corps of Engineers, and Public Service Commission.
Motion been made and seconded to the motion. All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Abstention? Motion carries. Now, do we want to see the bright smiling faces back here next month?
Yeah, do we have consent on the escrow amount?
The question for me, and you had mentioned $2,500 for stormwater. Are you going to come back with a suggestion from Carla or whoever you may have reviewed the decommissioning plan?
Yeah, it may or may not. Depends on if we go as far as I started and that's it, or if we engage a private entity of some sort.
Yeah, why don't we send you the plan, send you the NYSERDA sort of reference documents, and you know, certainly if you feel that you need it, we'll send an additional offer over.
Mr. Martin, it sounds to me like they're consenting to spend money if they have to.
Correct.
Okay.
I think that's all we're looking for.
Okay.
But we will certainly try the public option first, meaning they sort of to fill that role.
Okay. Our next meeting is
May 17th.
17th. We can't give them 30 days between now and then.
No. So I think you're instantly looking at June.
Yep.
Oh, you decided you were not going to schedule a public hearing tonight anyway, correct? So we would look at schedule a public hearing in May for the June meeting.
That's my understanding.
Yes. Yep.
I think we agree on something. Wow. That's a miracle. We're going to turn about their plan. Do you have any questions of us?
No, I don't think so. I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Have a good night. Mike or Jim, I'm going to try and give this back to you.
Yes, please do.
And finally.
All right, you have it back.
Yep, I have it back. Thank you.
All right, have a good evening.
Have a good evening.
Thank you, Travis.
Thanks, Travis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gary Robinson, are you there? Gary? Gotta unmute yourself.
Yes, I am. It took me a second to wake up.
Yep. The alarm clock went off just in the nick of time.
Okay, we're back from ZBA. I don't know if you'd like to go through the whole thing to start again, or you guys remember us from 4 months ago?
Well, let me just brief the board on this, what's been happening with this particular piece of property.
Okay.
Go ahead, Gary.
What we've done, first of all, we represent general contracting. This parcel is about 5 acres in size in an R2 zone, and the lot size is about a half an acre. And we're looking at 5 parcels there with the parcel. When we originally came in, we looked at a common common driveway to service the lots, so that we didn't have as much pavement, as much impervious area, and it was a little less expensive and gave us a little bigger lots. What we were told was we had to go to ZBA to get a variance to do that. So we went to ZBA, we talked to them the first night, sounded pretty good. They asked us to give them a little more information, so we went back to the second meeting, gave them a little more information that they asked for, and that meeting, still, we felt good about it. They asked us for a little more information, so we brought it in, and then they decided that they didn't want to have a private driveway, a private common driveway. So here we are back at planning board, and we looked at a couple different options here. One was to have flag lots and do a common driveway similar to a project that you guys had up on 32 not that long ago. And the owner really didn't like the idea of breaking the lots up like that. It kind of gives you a lot of room and a lot of area that doesn't get to be in the lots. It's in an odd shape that comes out to the main road, and it just didn't look good to them. So we tried to sneak in this cul-de-sac, which is a standard detail that the town has now for this offset cul-de-sac, and it barely fits. It's just about snuck in there. I can tell you that we're getting ready to do some test pits on the site. Of course, the health department has to be involved in this because there's 5 lots less than 5 acres. I have talked to the highway superintendent. I have talked to Jesse about the water. I have talked to DOT briefly also. We're hoping to get out there probably week after next to do some test holes. I've contacted the health department just trying to find out when they can get us on the schedule. And probably a few things I'll be looking from Jim, I think, or from Jim. I'm just curious. I know that there were some issues there with groundwater levels, and I talked with DOT, and they had done a lot of work on the culvert that runs across the road there and some of the ditches. I was just looking to see if the town had any information, whether there were any reports done on it, groundwater issues there. I know that one of the partners is Mark Storer, who lived there. And he says that with a little fill, we'll have no issues whatsoever with that. But I'd just like to see if there's any information that the town may have on it. So we're kind of in the beginning. I just wanted to come back and just spend a little time with you and tell you where we are and what we're thinking, and then get back out and do some work. Anybody has any questions?
This is about to Route 197.
Correct.
And I may be turned upside down crossways and backwards, but is this close to the latest, one of the latest subdivisions from Gardner-Kagan? It was in around the Great Fox area that came out to 197.
Well,
go ahead, Gary.
You can see at the top of the plan there, Great Fox Drive, which is, I think it's one of the last subdivisions that was done there. I think it was added, I don't know, it's been a while now, but I think there was a few lots that were added in there. I think they were filled in order to meet the requirements for the on-site septic systems. So it would be a similar thing that we would be doing. We would be filling the lots to have an on-site septic system.
So we have trouble with groundwater down there now, you know, people with water in their cellars and all that kind of thing. by you filling this up, Gary, what's that going to do to the existing and pushing that over towards Route 32 there where the water lays right now? You know, this is the old NRA club, is that right? Where you're going in? Is this the old NRA building where you're going in here?
The NRA building was in. I don't know what that is.
Okay.
Is it, you mean the shooting? The
yes, yes. Yeah.
The gun club's just to the east of that.
Okay, okay.
I'm sorry, just to the west.
Just to the west of that, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Just to the west.
There are groundwater issues here, though, that we got to be very careful of. There was a lot of complaints from the Gray Fox Dry folks. And then to compound the problem, the storm drain system downstream across 197, is my understanding, was blocked and has since been opened up again. But it is a wet area.
There's been a history of that being blocked all the time, and it's been an ongoing problem for quite some time.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I'm trying to figure out from this map the parcel that the applicant owns. There's a whole bunch of lots here, and we've only put numbers on five of them. We put letters on two of them. And then there's two other lots that appear to be out on 197 that aren't listed but are drawn. And I guess I've got dotted lines over on lots off of Great Fox Drive, and I'm just having troubles. Are we only looking at the numbered lots that are shown?
The numbered lots and the lettered lines.
The letter, okay, so let me ask this. The lettered lots that are listed here, are they part of this site plan review or this sketch plan review?
What the plan is apparently before this lot was purchased by Dental Contracting, there was some arrangements made between Gardner and adjacent neighbors that land would be transferred to the adjacent owners. The one up in the top left, which is Area A, you can see that there's a couple of sheds there, and apparently there was an agreement made between the owner and that neighbor that he could have that piece of land that was up there to put those sheds and do whatever he wanted with it as part of his lot. But it never actually got done. So part of the deal that Gardner had with Denham is that would be a lot line adjustment. It would take that property and attach it to the adjacent one. And it's essentially the same deal as on Area B. That was promised to some. I'm not sure which one of those lots. Those two lots you're talking about on 197 are not our lots.
Okay.
Submitted the original submission we had the survey, and the survey had the adjacent lot owners on it. But I'll be sure we'll come back on that.
Okay, so lot Area B is, if I'm understanding this correctly, you're saying that one is also being lot line adjustment added to another lot that has frontage on a highway?
Yes.
Okay. That's what my main concern is, that we weren't creating other size lots that are not attached to a highway.
No, right. Those were apparently part of the deal when these guys bought this, when Dental bought this lot. So,
okay.
Yep. So
they're not part of the site plan review.
Correct.
So maybe on the next plan that you send to us, Gary, you can have it maybe highlighted what the boundary lines are of the property that we are reviewing?
Yes, we will. Okay.
But as a practical matter, Gary, I'm going to need to see those conveyances actually executed and that those boundary adjustments done. If that's the case, then there's no reason why that can't go forward.
And I think that that's actually in the works. I know they have an attorney, and I'm pretty sure, and I don't know if Mark Stewart is at. Do you see him, Jim?
Yeah, I can unmute him. Hold on.
If you can unmute him, I think he can help us out with that.
There you go. He's on.
Yep, I'm on. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, so we are working with that, with Landon, an agreement that we're honoring that was done years ago, is my understanding. And the second one, I don't know what letter it is, but the one that attaches to the ponds, that's actually part of the stormwater management that was agreed upon at the last four blocks of the gray box. Road or drive listed out as so the Great Fox Drive subdivision, that is actually going to be attached to that. Obviously, there's a right way that goes all the way back to the road, and then it continues up 497. And Gardner Condon actually owns another section of land on the other side of that pond, which probably isn't shown on that map.
All right, so my main concern is, as long as we don't have any landlocked parcels being created that are just voids in the, you know, in the landscape here, we got to have them incorporated into other lots that have frontage on a road.
Yeah, we understand that those boundary line agreements would have to be done prior to the subdivision approved.
Yep.
Okay, so Jim, you can hear me, right?
Yep.
This is why I bring it up, because I have some concerns here. We've got in the corner of that, the bottom ranking corner of that area, there's some kind of somewhat rectangular shaped tiny parcel that's not part of this conveyance of area B, but it's also not part of the lot out front. And I don't even know what that is, but it's going to be a landlocked little sliver of land. And then over by
I can tell you that about Morgan Avenue.
Oh, sure,
that
sure.
That already has its own B attached to it, and Gardner Condon still owns that. It was actually a separate parcel from the land that we produced.
So that little, it's got to be like a, what, 700ths of a piece of land there? So
yep,
that's an acre?
And yeah, I think Jim would be able to clarify that with the town that actually already has its own deed and deed number.
Well, I'd have to see if it's an existing parcel or not. A lot of times you can have a deed for a piece of property that necessarily hasn't been filed with the county, so I got to look into that.
And then also over by where the gun club is, there's some boundary lines over there that I'm not even sure what this is. We've got these little slivers, triangular slivers of land. And maybe, Gary, when the next map comes, you can tell us who owns them?
Yeah, like I said, Let me just look at the survey here for a while. See if he has what was listed.
Mitch, just now's the time to clean this up.
Oh, absolutely. Those portions, that little box there that we're talking about, the rectangle, that does not have an owner listed.
Under area B.
Right. And okay. On this other side, there is a proposed conveyance. Let's see, let's start. The one, if you look down at 197, the one that is 15.51 feet,
yes,
does not show a owner for that property. It does show an owner to that property. It's hard to tell. But both those slivers are owned by Brody, who is someone that owns the gun.
Okay.
So,
and then, does that include the sliver to the east?
That includes the sliver to the east.
Okay, so that there's no way that needs to be conveyed out of lot 2 and 1 and 3.
The way that the survey shows, I will check with them, but the way the survey shows it does not need to be conveyed.
Okay. Because, I mean, it almost looks like there was just some confusion as far as what was surveyed when, you know what I mean, looking at it coming out from 197, it almost looks like they had two different surveys that didn't mesh. And I just want to make sure we were clear on where the boundaries are when we get set up these lots. So that's all, Gary. If you could clear that up for sure.
I'll make sure we get that in the way and we figure that out before we get here next. Before we come here.
Okay.
Thank you, Gary.
Not sure if anybody else has any questions, but we got a little bit of work to do before we get there.
Then this will be subject to a sweat, Gary, so just in your scheduling and your planning and your financial planning.
Say again, Jim, I missed the beginning of that.
I said this will be subject to a sweat.
Right, yes. Yep.
So, Gary, who owns the center of the cul-de-sac?
I believe the town owns the center of the cul-de-sac.
Okay.
And I believe the town maintains it, and it is the way that that detail shows, and I did talk to Paul Joseph about that, it does slope off to the road. And then it goes down to those two catch basins that are down in the neck, where it necks up there, is where the stormwater goes to that. So I'm not sure that I want to talk to them about that and see if we can do something else, because I'm not sure what we'll do with stormwater. It all depends where that groundwater is.
All right, well, the map that I have that came in my packet doesn't have anything designated for stormwater.
That's right, it doesn't.
Okay, all right, so I'm not missing something. Okay.
You're not. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to get, you know, I'd like to use the cul-de-sac, but right now, and I don't know if they've been out there, but they're scheduled to go out. The users need to go out and topo on the site. And once we get that, we'll be out. I'm hoping that we can put some stormwater on top of the center of the cul-de-sac, which may or may not work. We're looking at some other issues. Then ultimately, annuals will go down to Route 197.
Overflow of the development itself.
Yeah, you know, we always try to get an overflow out of any systems that we use. And the road's going to be going right down to Route 197, so it's a simple place to just put an overflow. I'm presuming that the soils are good there, from what I've seen and what I've heard. The soils are good there. The only issue is the storm or the groundwater, and we need to get a strong indication of where that is, so we can stay above it. And maybe we have to be up higher. I'm not sure how much fill it's going to be. So,
but you're not proposing managing the stormwater from this site off site, right?
No.
Okay.
So we're planning on managing it on site, and just once we get the grading and see if anything's going to act to that cul-de-sac, then we'll have a better idea what we can do.
And you'll be doing perk tests on this?
Yeah, I have an email to Kevin Kenyon of the health department. Told that we had these five lots there, and said that what we'd like to do is not next week, but probably the week after, get out there and do some test holes. I also talked to Matt to see if he wanted to be out there, and he wanted to be out there, so just trying to coordinate with him so we can get out there, and at the same time, we'll probably do some perk tests and also some infiltration tests.
I'll take some fill.
Jim, what's the zoning designation on this spot?
I believe it's R2.
This R2? Okay.
Hey, Gary, it's Terry Bouchard. Are you intending to have all of the driveways for the individual lots off of this cul-de-sac private driveway? They're not going to be more curb cuts on 197?
No, no more curb cuts on 197. They'd all be off the town. It's a town road. It's not a private drive, it would be a town road.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Paul Joseph really didn't want it, but the ZBA didn't really care that he didn't want it. They're not proponents of common driveways.
Okay. Yeah, they actually got denied. The variance for lack of frontage on the town road was denied.
Okay, I must have missed that. Thank you.
Turnabout Spirit Lane, Mr. Robinson, do you have any questions of us?
Like I say, the only thing I was really looking to find out is if there was any reports that were done. And as I understood it, I think long ago there was some work done on groundwater levels there. And I don't know if it was included with anything that was done with Michael's group thing up there. Or
well, I think you're going to have to research all that out, Gary. It's going to require that and Gardner Common subdivision. And if we can get it to, if we have a little bit of time, Kathy can get at the archives for those subdivisions and try and research that out.
Yeah, I wasn't sure exactly what was done. You know, you did a lot of work on Michael's group and looked at where the groundwater levels were up there, and I wasn't sure. I thought they might have projected something out. I don't even know who did that.
Gardner's was the first one that went in there, and that was years ago, and so the information is going to be spotty. And my understanding is Michael's group was more recent, and therefore the information will be better.
In this area, was Gardner's last, and the Great Fox area that was done, and then there was an add to that subdivision much later. As you came out to 197,
right. There'd
be a drainage way coming up. That would be the last one for this area.
Okay. Do you know who the engineer was for that, Pete, by any chance?
No, I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember either.
Gary, you do know there's a drain line down behind Dool's property and in through there? You know about that?
Say it again.
The drain line that goes down behind Dool's garage and everything through from the Michaels group and drains out?
I don't know that.
Okay, why don't you give Joel a call tomorrow? He could probably fill you in on that.
Joe who?
Patrick.
Joe Patrick?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he could give you some information on that. That's back when we both were here and stuff, so I'm pretty sure he's familiar with that.
Okay.
That could help you out.
I didn't realize he was still working for the town.
Who, me?
Yes.
No, Joe's not working for the town, but he could probably give you some information on how that worked over there.
Just kidding.
We're like old dogs, we never leave, you know?
All right, I'll give him a call and ask him.
Yeah.
Thanks, Gary.
Okay, thanks, guys. Any other questions?
No, Gary.
I don't think so, not at this juncture.
Okay.
Board,
so hopefully we can get something done, maybe be in next week or next month, but maybe not.
We'll have a slot on.
Okay. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gary.
Board,
thanks, Jim.
Yep.
I have one more item that we have to address, and that is we need to give Mr. Martin some direction. On these planning board nights, if he has a lot of applications, do you want to have an extended meeting, or do you want to break it down into two separate nights, meaning one being a special meeting, and we'll make people wait, applicants wait another month. If you decide you want to, whichever way you decide you want to go, we need to give Mr. Martin marching orders as to how many we're going to address in each session. So it's one, take it until it's done, or split it up depending on the load that his office receives. We can't sit here and tell you what it's going to be. We don't know. Everything has to come into the town hall, and Jim will see it, or Kathy. What do you want to do? We can't leave it to Jim to make the decision for us. It needs to be our call.
I would just like to have a little guidance because, you know, I heard from a couple of members, you know, that they don't like the long the one long meeting, and I understand that, and I appreciate it. Like tonight, for example, it could have gone either way, from my point of view. If you recall, a couple months ago, it was very clear. We had 8 applications. We split it into 2 meetings, 4 applications per night. Where it's somewhat subjective is the type of application. You know, if it's like a warning site plan review, if you have 5 of them, you know, that's not that bad. But if you have 4, you know, multiple lot subdivisions, 30, 40 lot subdivisions, that's another matter. And I understand that. I'm just looking for a general guide, you know, like in a case like tonight's meeting, you know, we didn't, you know, for timing wise, anyhow, I understand the applicant had to withdraw, but timing wise, that saved a lot of time. I mean, tonight, that would have been. So, is a general rule of thumb you prefer to have 2 meetings? And like tonight, we could have done 3 and 3. You know, 3 applicants tonight and 3 on a future night, or you want to try and get through it on one night and stay longer. I'm just looking for some general guidance, and then we'll know what to do with the applications when they come in. If it's marginal like this, we'll just split off into another night.
Is there any chance we can start the meeting earlier?
That's up to the members.
I'd go to 6 o'clock. I think a 6 o'clock start would be great.
Well, seriously, with me, at this point, if the meetings are going to go until 10:30 at night, I'm going to have to resign. Because I get up at 3:30 in the morning, by the time we get done with this meeting.
And I'm going to do the same, Jerry.
I'm going to sleep tonight. I'm going to get, 4 hours sleep, and I got a presentation tomorrow to naval reactors in Washington, and I'm not real thrilled about the long haul here, but I stuck it out because I felt I owed it to the applicant. But if it's going to be like this, and I don't know what to tell you, Jim. I mean, with me, if it gets beyond 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, I'm just not going to be able to support it.
Yeah.
But that's just me. You know, there's 14,000 people in this town.
I appreciate that, and I didn't want to. I've heard, that there was some concern, and I didn't want to be unresponsive to that. So,
I can appreciate that. I think if you have 2 public hearings, realistically, this has been an exceptional couple of months, right?
That's correct. And this is, at least during the I've been here since 2016, and this is exceptional. And
right.
from that standpoint.
So, could I make a suggestion? That maybe we start the meetings at 6 and do a couple meetings for a month and then see what happens?
I'm good for that.
You what?
I would appreciate that. I mean, that would make this meeting would be finishing at 9:30, right?
Correct, yeah. Yeah, because I'm a guy that's up at 4:30, quarter to 5.
What I'm hearing is a general rule, because it also depends on the number of applications. I mean, if you recall, it wasn't, I don't think it was, 8, 9 months ago? We didn't have a meeting because there was no applications.
Correct.
So it's highly variable.
Well, with the sewer coming in, it's going to get busy.
But I guess I'd say probably 5 applicants.
I was going to say 4.
Rule,
sounds to me like 4 is the number that we can't go beyond. Because even if it's very complicated, you got 3 of those are public hearings, and they're bigger projects. You can get through 4.
And if we start at 6, we could get, like Jerry said, we could get out of here at 9:30. I think that would be great.
I also think you could do a special meeting. I mean, my opinion would be you should do them in consecutive weeks.
Well, I think it worked well the way we did it last time. I think we did have it. Was it consecutive weeks or we skipped a week?
We skipped a week.
Yeah.
We almost have to because of the notifications.
Yep. Does that give Kathy enough time in the office?
Pardon?
Does that give Kathy enough time in the office to get things out if we do it consecutive?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can tell you, she's not going to be a fan of 2 meetings. I can tell you she's not.
Yeah, well,
so, Jim, I'm going to say this.
Yep.
To me, I would say the cutoff would be like anything more than 5. Because if you're going to split up, say you have 6 meetings or 6 applicants, now you've got 3 and 3 if you're going to split them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If you're saying anything more than 4, you could end up with 2 meetings with 2 applicants each.
I see your point. Yep.
So I would say 5 is a single meeting limit, and anything over 5, we're splitting it up. I'm going to say that 6 o'clock, I can understand everybody's concern, and I feel for everybody on it. It could be a hardship for me. I could be there by 7. You know, I'll make the meeting still. I just may not be there by 6, depending on what's going on in my business.
Yep.
Probably 7 or 8 months of the year, it's not an issue at all.
Why?
There's more of them here in the summer, then it could be a bit of a challenge.
I just didn't want members to feel like complaints or concerns were falling on deaf ears. So
no.
That's appreciated.
Let's start with the no more than 5, and we'll leave it at 7 o'clock, and I guess we'll see where that goes.
How about 6:30, John? Would that work for you?
Obviously, I mean, I'd like to do it at 6 and be done as early as possible myself. It's just I think that sometimes it might be a bit of a challenge for me, especially in the summertime, to make a 6 o'clock meeting. 6:30 would be better, 7. You know, I've always managed to make it, sometimes a minute ahead, but I've always managed to make it at 7.
Well, how about we try 6:30 and we'll see what happens with it.
But to lean towards other members of the board, I'm not getting up at 3:30 in the morning to go to work, so... If I was, I might feel completely different about it. So I understand that.
Well, I just want to be able to make sure I can hear. I mean, I've been up since 3:30 this morning, so I'm about 30 seconds away from saying goodnight.
Yeah. I've been up since 4:30, so, you know, 4 to 5, so.
Yeah, but Jerry, you're a whole bunch younger than I am, so.
Yeah, that's it.
Plus, I won't be here next month anyway, since my birthday. So.
The upshot is, board, was the consensus. We have to get Mr. Martin something.
Well, what I'm hearing is the consensus is anything more than 5 is instantly 2 meetings.
Right.
And try
and make it. Then maybe even 5. And I'll be sensitive to that. If I see something, if it's complicated or we got a lot of public hearings, a lot of information, then we'll split 3 and 2 even.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I'd be inclined to give Jim, and actually, Jim, if you wanted to confer with Peter about the load, because I do think each of these cases involves, you know, substantially different amounts of time. So, like, that little subdivision we did second took no time, and a contracting didn't take much time. But some of these bigger, more complicated projects, I mean, this was 5. We handled 5 tonight, and it's 10:30. So, I guess I would leave you with greater discretion to decide, not give you an absolute number, but give you the discretion to decide that it's too much to handle on any meeting.
Well, if it's a tendency to want to go to a second meeting, I'm definitely going to confer with Peter. I'm not going to do that unilaterally.
Right.
So, but I will definitely confer with Peter to make sure that there's a consensus between he and I that a second meeting is warranted and we split 3-2 or something like that.
I'm otherwise in favor of having the 2 meetings. I have no problem with that.
All right. Because I just didn't know. I think it could have been a situation where some people, I don't want to come out on a second night. I want to just ram through in one night. There's that point of view too.
Yep.
And I didn't want to be presumptuous to say one way or the other. So I wanted the issue raised.
Yeah. And are we in? Go ahead.
So what? Yeah,
use your discretion. You've been doing this for some years. You know what's going to be painful.
But when we get up around 5, then that's okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
How about starting at 6:30? Would that work for everyone? I'd like to try it.
But I think John's already said it's an issue for him in the summer, so maybe towards the fall we can do it.
Well, it's something we can't bounce back and forth. It's the type of thing where you have to have some consistency.
All right, so we'll leave it alone.
You can't say for the summer months we're going to be 6:30 and whatever months we're going to be 6:30.
Leave it alone. Okay, John, you owe us.
Well, I just say 7 o'clock, and Mr. Martin is going to use a 5 applicant as his game board, but if there's somebody like U.S. Life and Energy, maybe we're going to cut it down to 3.
Right.
He has to use some common sense.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'd just like to say to Mike and Jerry, I've been practicing shutting up so the meetings can get done quicker.
Keep practicing, John. Keep practicing. I want you to know we're building a solar system in a sewer district, Dan.
No, I'm good. Thank you for broaching that with the board.
Thank you.
I want you guys to be aware that we're sensitive to the problem.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Do I have a motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion made. Second. Second. Mr. Shaker. Motion made. Second. Some further discussion? If not, all those in favor, aye.
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 Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone. Motion. Jim, turn this to the left. Turn this to the left.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I better leave it alone.
Just let the power off.
I'll leave it alone.
I already messed up. I thought I had it on and I didn't. Until you, Jim, these numbers aren't moving.
And I go, Jim, these numbers aren't